Welcome back to Radio Boston. I'm Shira Springer. There aren't many people like Archer Mayer. His resume includes travel writer, theater photographer, medical illustrator, newspaper editor, and currently, he's a death investigator for Vermont's chief medical examiner and a detective for his local sheriff's office. It's those last two jobs that have helped Mayer do what he's most famous for, write 27 crime novels featuring the likable but unusual detective Joe Gunther. His latest book featuring Gunther is Presumption of Guilt, and Archer Mayer joins us now from Vermont Public Radio to talk about it. Welcome, Archer.
Well, thank you very much, Shira. Nice to be on.
We'll get to your newest book in a second, but first, how does somebody with your background start writing a detective series?
Actually, you start upside down on your head, because I was writing this series of books before I began the other two jobs. That's one of the side benefits of living in Vermont, is that there are only 12 of us up here. So we all have to do everything from the guy at the low end who lives under the bridge to the guy at the high end who happens to be the governor. So if you don't have three jobs in Vermont, you're underemployed. So I came here as a an unemployed author, which is one of the prerequisites for the job, and immediately began to pick law enforcement brains, and they were more than delighted to share their tall tales. But I'm an ex-journalist and historian, and I love digging into people's brains and what they do for a living. I'm just sort of naturally nosy. And after a while, both the medical examiner's office and law enforcement said, you know, at this point, you probably know as much or more about what we're doing than we do. So here's a gun, here are the keys, and here's a microscope, and, you know, get to it. So they both hired me in various, you know, complicated ways. But there I am, and now I have my three jobs. So I'm a full-fledged Vermonter, even though I wasn't born here.
I'm a bit naturally nosy myself, so can you tell me what exactly does a death investigator do?
Ah, yes. Well, of course, officially we're called medical examiners. It makes us sound like we read a lot of books. We don't. We find out what killed you. So if you're dead and you're 106 years old and you have a bottle of scotch in one hand and an empty carton of cigarettes in the other, people will stand around as you cross the threshold saying, well, I'm here to investigate why he died, and they'll say, duh. But when you roll him over and you find a knife in his back, you realize, oh, he had a cousin who was eager for some inheritance that no one knew about. This is Vermont, after all. We all dress down up here. And so that's why we exist. Unless there's a doctor standing by saying, I said that he had triple trichinosis and it was going to knock him off, and now he's knocked off and I'll sign the death certificate. If we don't have a situation like that, then someone like me is called in to take a closer look at your curiously still body.
So I have to ask, what about that whole process do you find particularly satisfying?
Oh, all of it. I love being a death investigator. It is my happiest job. Oh, that came out kind
that
of
came out a bit odd.
Yes, a little odd. Okay, well.
But right, I understand your passion and your intent.
Thank you. We'll put on the delete function on that.
No, we're live.
I know. It's unusual for me, but we are live. I love the job because it does two major things. It finds the truth, and it also delivers answers to those who are clustered around the guy who just died. After all, this is not a static situation. These people inhabited a part of the world, and that world was populated by people who want to know what happened. I exist in large part for them. Yes, I speak for the guy who can no longer speak for him or herself, but I also am there to help explain what happened and what will happen to Uncle Charlie or Aunt Maud. And I think that, at least in the 15 years or so that I've been doing this, I think I can see in their faces a great sense of reward there. So as long as they're happy to see me come across the threshold, which, believe it or not, many of them are. Weirdly, since I'm a local, area, I've actually had people look up and say, "Oh, thank God it's you," because people know each other up here. And if I can help explain things as I just described, it brings them a little bit of peace.
I can actually see how that could be satisfying.
Yeah.
I have to ask, though, how does your work as a death investigator and a detective influence and inform the crime writing you do? I mean, do you draw, for lack of a better word here, inspiration from what you see? Explain that process to me.
Well, there's a bright, shining line that I hold myself to observe. That shining line is never bring a real case to bear in a work of fiction, ever. It's not right. It's not honorable. It's not respectful. And I don't think that the people who have died or the people who have survived them need to be so assailed by the likes of me. However, I write and have written now for 30-odd years about people under stress. I don't actually write whodunits. I write whydunits. Why do we do what we do, and how do we respond to those emotions? And that's what I get to study as a detective and as a death investigator, is people in times of high emotional alert dealing with those emotions and trying to figure out how to do what to do next. And that I absolutely bring to my work.
Now, you've said before that your paternal side of the family comes from, quote, New England lunatic fringe.
Guilty as charged, yeah.
Okay. Explain what you mean by that, and how did they influence you?
Well, there are, if you were to take the New England historical anthropological pie, you would have, the Covington Wordsworth the Fourths, and they're the guys who own all the palatial estates on the islands off of Maine. And then you got all the guys whose first names begin with Vito, who actually made all of New England tick by working in the factory towns and turned it into, unfortunately, what's now referred to as the Rust Belt, but once was the dynamo that made America strong. And those, of course, those are the guys that made us what we are, and we now choose to forget about them. But there they are. And then you have the aforementioned lunatic slice of that. It's a very narrow slice. And these are the scientists / artists. Most of them walk around in bare feet, and they're in a little bit of water off the shore, and they're looking at mollusks or seashells. And since this predates cameras, they draw them or they sketch them. And my forebears were marine biologists and or sculptors and painters and that kind, and writers. So I fit right in with that slightly loopy bunch. And we come from Gloucester, Mass., in fact, just a little bit north of you.
Oh, wow. So I have to ask, in a broader look at people, what do you think it is about detective novels and murder mysteries that's so appealing? I mean, it seems like everyone from young readers to old English professors to the rest of us, we've been loving them since at least Agatha Christie and Sherlock Holmes. What's the appeal?
I think it's chaos codified. In other words, we wake up and the world is a mess, and we walk befuddled through it for most of our daylight hours. And when we go to bed, it's still in a mess. And we survived, we hope, but we can't really sort of make rhyme or reason of it. And every day we read in our newspapers about the chaos continuum. So why would you read a book that mirrors this world? Well, because it doesn't actually mirror it. You've got the good guys, you got the bad guys, and you have resolution, by and large. You obviously get the sort of the countercultural ones that they're the dark books that in which all this is not rendered right. But for the most part, detective stories talk about morality. There's a sin, if you will, that was committed, and the righteous set out to set it straight. And in effect, at the end, for the most part, it is set straight. There may be losses, there may be sorrow along the way, but that resolution gives us comfort. And I think there's a subliminal message to it all that tells us that, yeah, it may hurt a little, but things will work out. And that's my personal belief as to why this form of literature is so popular.
Now, your latest novel features your recurring character, Detective Joe Gunther, and it's called Presumption of Guilt. Tell us a little bit about what that novel covers.
Well, I like the idea. I'm a historian by training. Before I wrote these books, I wrote history books. And I like the idea, whenever I can, of going back in time. So Vermont Yankee, which is a nuclear facility in the southeast corner of Vermont, which has now been decommissioned, was put in place in 1970, and it was a gigantic construction project. And it occurred to me that while you're slinging all that concrete around, why not throw somebody into it, you know, and then sort of pave him over? Well, come the decommissioning nowadays, 40 years later, let's find him again. And I love the idea not only of the science, what happens to a body after 40 years in concrete, because I'm a bit of a nerd along those lines, so I had to find all that out, and I have friends in weird places who can instruct me. But I also like the history, because the 1970s were a key period of time in Vermont's history. We always think of it now as the Socialist Republic of Bernie Sanders, but in fact, in the old days, it was the rock-ribbed Republican bastion, and that for hundreds of years, darn near. So what went, you know, wherefore that transition? Well, it happened exactly in the 1970s. So I can talk a little bit about that. But more importantly, and here goes to the heart of the novel, is that you find this guy. He can't speak for himself. And there you can see the medical examiner speaking. So, gee, why not dump some stuff on his head since he can't protect and defend himself? And therefore, the presumption of guilt is that if there are sins that we can link to 1970, and there he is, recumbent and voiceless, let's dump it all on him and make him the guilty guy. So I thought it'd be interesting if Joe Gunther looked into it and went, hang on, that's too convenient. I'll speak for him, and we will find the true miscreant.
So you mentioned a lot of science, a lot of history goes into your novels. Mm-hmm. How much research goes into your novels?
Quite a bit.
How long is that process?
I write a book a year, so you've got 12 months. In my case, it's 13 months just because I'm odd. So I would say I'd spend 5 months researching.
Wow.
It's not hard and fast, but I spend a lot of time talking to folks, interviewing people, going places. I'll describe the most unspeakable, gloomy, wet, damp, dark holes, and I only describe them because I go there.
So I have to ask, how much of Joe Gunther is you?
I should, of course, not answer that. But in fact, I'm as befuddled as anyone. There's another character in this series of books who is really quite inappropriate. I'm more him than Joe Gunther. I start every day looking in the mirror and thinking to myself, gosh, wouldn't I love to be Joe Gunther? And that may be why I describe him as I do. But it isn't 5 minutes into the day that I don't visit this other character whose name is Willie. So my day is populated with Willie moments. And my daughter, in fact, has been quoted as saying, doesn't anybody know you're truly Willie?
Now, your 28th book is already written and will be out next fall. I can't tell you how impressed I am with the how productive you are. Can you give us a little bit of a preview?
Yes, actually, I can. It's a hefty book. It's coming in at 360 pages right now. And the reason for that is that I
even more impressed.
I decided to visit upon my readers fact that all cops know, and that is there's no such thing as a single cop or squad and a single case as we see on TV all the time. I'm semi-retired as a cop now, but when I was going full-fledged, I'd have, 20 to 30 cases going simultaneously. And it's okay. Everyone does that in law enforcement. Well, you can't write a novel along those lines. But in my case, where I have a squad of three separate investigators, why not have them have three separate investigations, all running parallel throughout this book? And most people, when they hear that description, they go, oh, isn't that great? And then you'll tie them all together at the end. And I say, no, I won't. They're separate. So tighten your seatbelts, because this is going to be an entertaining story.
It sounds it. That's Archer Mayer. He is the author of Presumption of Guilt, the latest in his series featuring Detective Joe Gunther. He's also the death investigator for Vermont's chief medical examiner and a detective for his local sheriff's office. Thank you, Archer.
It's been a real pleasure, Shira. Thank you.
Stay with us. In a minute, we'll talk about the food trends of 2016. And we want to hear from you. What trends have you seen, and what are you hoping might disappear? You can call us at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. And find us on Facebook and Twitter at Radio Boston. We'll be back in 60 seconds. I'm Shira Springer, and this is Radio Boston. Thank you.